Now, this morning, I would like to just, the title of the sermon here is Thoughts on Grief. And I will not be reading a scripture until the end. So, just give you some thoughts on grief. I didn't plan ahead quite as soon as I should have to make sure that the projector is here. I had a presentation along with it, but we don't really need that. We think we need something sometimes, but we don't always need everything we think we need. So as we talked about before. Defining grief then. How would you define grief? What would be some definitions that you might have? Can you help me out?
Sorrow.
Depression. Yes.
Disorientation.
Mm-hmm. Yes.
A sense of loss.
Yes. I have here deep sorrow, especially that caused by someone's death. You've heard the comment, he or she was overcome with grief. So that's a deep sorrow can be grief. Now, I recognize there's a wide spread between deep grief and small disappointments. Now, all of us go through small disappointments. Some of us, probably as we go through life, all of us will experience deep grief sometime. Now, people sometimes use the words, they won't give you any grief the next few days. That's not really deep grief. It's just somebody which isn't going to give you any grief. That's not usually talking about the grief as I'm speaking about it here. But there are many words that we may use to describe grief. And you've already said some of the words. Sorrow, misery, sadness, anguish, pain, distress, might be heartache, heartbreak, agony, or torment, affliction, or suffering, or woe, or desolation, dejection, despair, mourning, mournfulness or bereavement, and lamentation. There are so many different words that we have to describe grief. And so it must be a very, very real part of human existence because we have so many words that we use to describe it. Now, I know there's a vast difference between deep grief and small disappointments, as I've already said, but I'm fully convinced that the better we learn to deal with or handle the small disappointments of life, the easier it is to accept some of the painful and crushing disappointments of life, the bigger painful and crushing disappointments. If we learn to deal with the small ones, it's easier to deal with the large ones. Now, people all over the world are regularly faced with different types of grief, that things that cause grief, such as rejection or loss or pain or disappointments. Rejection, we have grief sometimes. We've had rejection from family and friends, neighbors, sometimes even total strangers can reject us, that we don't even know the people, and it still causes, why did they do that to me? I mean, what was wrong with me? And so many times we point back at ourselves when we're rejected. Then there's grief. Loss can also cause grief. Loss of possessions. Loss of position. You know, maybe a person has lost a position. Loss of companionship or friendships. Or there's lots of kinds of losses out there, and they cause grief in our lives. And then there's also pain. I'm thankful right now that I don't necessarily know of any pain in my life. I have a little bit of physical pain that's always there. My one large toe is I don't know why, it's just always a little bit painful. I had too many wagon hitches fall on it over the years, but that's my minimal. It's just that when I walk, I don't even think about it most of the time, but I do if I think about it. Oh yeah, it's still there. So, but pain, there can be physical, emotional, and spiritual pain, and those things can cause us grief. And then there's also disappointment that can cause grief, such as maybe we're not able to take a long anticipated trip, or you might miss out on, where's Kenny, miss out on summer camp because you're sick. Or there's a lot of other kinds of disappointments that we might have that can cause us grief. I'll let you fill in the blanks. What are some disappointments that you wish, but then you have grief? So, how can we deal with those traumatic incidents in our lives? Those things are traumatic to us. Are there some basic fundamental principles or truths that can be applied or brought in to every situation to help us out? Lost my place here. I blame it on my glasses. I'm convinced that many of you could give many more ideas and principles than I've thought of or come across, but maybe our thoughts can be stimulated in the right direction by our consideration of the subject today here. People use many different mechanisms, coping mechanisms, with varying effectiveness. For instance, this has happened some years ago. My youngest daughter used humor to cope with taking pills, and they get stuck in her throat. So she philosophized like this. She said, "If a pill gets stuck in your throat, keep swallowing. It will dissolve eventually, and you will not choke, even though the taste may surely kill you." So, I mean, she was only like 13 or 14 when she... Just one of those things that those humor can be a coping mechanism. Another coping mechanism people often use is comparison. You just look around, and you find someone with a worse situation than yours, and you comfort yourself with someone else's problems. Is that the right way to do it? So we comfort. Can I comfort myself with somebody else's problems? You know, even though I don't like to do that kind of thing, I still catch myself doing it without wanting to. I think it's a normal thing that we do sometimes. We look around and, well, let's find somebody with a worse problem. And so as we've been talking about grief a bit, probably some of you are wondering if I might talk about what is commonly thought of, known of, as the five stages of grief. How many of you have heard the five stages of grief? Okay. You probably couldn't say them, but the five stages of grief is something. Well, I'll just talk about history a little bit. I believe there are steps or stages that we often go through when we're faced with some traumatic incident in our life. And while I believe that, I believe that just progressing through these five steps is not a sign that we have successfully finished the course and come through with flying colors, just because we progress through the five stages of grief. So let's examine what is popularly called the five stages of grief. The five stages are denial, anger, bargaining, depression, and then finally acceptance. In 1969, Elizabeth Kubler-Ross wrote a book entitled On Death and Dying. In this book, she presents the five stages terminally ill patients may go through upon learning of their terminal illness. These stages were not originally called the five stages of grief, but rather the five stages of receiving catastrophic news. So first you have denial, then anger and bargaining, and then depression, and then acceptance. Now, how does that work out? Well, over the next 28 years, healthcare professionals, clergy, nurses, doctors, caregivers, students, and other readers of the book somehow mutated the stages into the five stages of grief instead of five stages of receiving catastrophic news. So, one of the unfortunate results of this popular generalization and definition of grief is that some segments and persons of our society have gotten so hung up on this formula for going through grief that if a person isn't progressing through the five stages in a timely manner and in the proper order, we step back and say, he or she had better get professional help, because they're not just going through these five stages the way they're supposed to go through. In fact, one researcher has found that some caregivers have actually gotten angry at the bereaved person for not following the stages in order. So much for that. Hello. Now, let's look at the definition of grief again. Deep sorrow, especially sorrow caused by someone's death. Maybe we could simplify it to simply say change equals loss equals grief. Now, in other words, a change of circumstance of any kind produces a loss of some kind, which will produce a grief reaction. So that's number one. And number two, grief reactions can be very small or very large. If the loss is not perceived as significant, if the loss is kind of just a small thing, the grief reaction will be minimal or will be barely felt. But significant grief responses which go unresolved can lead to mental, physical, and sociological problems and contribute to family dysfunction across generations. It's really important to deal with grief properly. So now, are we going to throw out the five stages of grief as useless? Well, let me give you a scenario here. You get out of the garage one morning, get into the car, turn the key, and hear nothing but roo, 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 roo. You turn it off. Think a little. You go into denial. And turn the key again. Same thing. Roo, roo. Once more you try it. And still, the car doesn't start. Now, you get upset and angry and talk to your newfound enemy. You pound the steering wheel while threatening to haul it off to the junkyard where it belongs and get a real car. Since you're still not getting anywhere, and you start, you resort to bargaining, making promises. Oh, please, car, if you will just start one more time, I promise I'll buy you a brand new battery, I'll get you a tune-up, I'll get you new tires, belts, and hoses, keep you in perfect working condition. Car still won't start. So you go into depression. Dear Lord, what am I going to do? I'll be late for work. I might lose my job. Oh no, I give up. I don't care. What's the use? Finally, after sitting there and looking over the situation, you accept it. And you do the next thing. You call Dad or call the auto club or call the mechanic shop or call the boss at work or find another way to work or whatever it takes to deal with this change of direction. So that's those five stages of grief. Now, this is not a trivial example. It might seem trivial. In fact, we all go through this process numerous times a day. A dead battery, the loss of a parking space, a wrong number, the loss of a pet, a job, a move to another city, an overdrawn bank account. Happened to me this morning. I got in the car and waited there, And I waited there. See, it always seems like you're waiting a long, long time when you're waiting a minute or two. And I had to go through this process of denial. No, Karen's going to come out. She'll be out. Well, after a while, I had to accept it. So now I'm going down the road, and I get a little upset, and my foot hits the pedal a little harder, and the speedometer goes up a bit more, and maybe I can still make it. And I like to hear the young people singing back here. Well, okay. So you just, instead of getting up, you start, and after a while you go through that, your bargaining and depression, and oh, I'll just accept it. You know, God's in control anyhow. And so those are trivial, those are small little things, but it is important. I'm very glad to report that it was not very long that it took me to go through those stages. By the time we got to whatever, the next stop sign, it was okay. I said, okay, we'll just keep on going. And it was actually probably my fault in the beginning because I didn't get out in the car soon enough because, you know, I won't say everything I said because it's not very nice. But, okay. So we go through the process numerous times. And always remember, any change in circumstance can cause us to go through this process. We don't have to go through the stages in sequence. We can skip a stage, or we can go through two or three simultaneously. On the way to church here, we were just talking, and Karen was telling me about my little grandniece who was sitting. My niece likes to post things about her daughter, and she said something about giving her little daughter a tiny little cup of coffee and donuts, and maybe she'll regret it after a while. Well, and just very, very soon she was regretting it because she said, here the little daughter was sitting there. And by the way, her name is Karen. This isn't saying that that's how Karen does, my wife Karen, but the donut had broken. And the little girl was sitting there crying while eating the donut. And so mom asked the little girl, so are you sad because your donut is broken? Yeah, and she was eating the donut and enjoying the donut. So she got the stages of grief mixed up. So she was accepting it and still being depressed at the same time. So, so sometimes we skip a stage or go through a two or three simultaneously. We can go through them in different time phases. The dead battery could take maybe 10 minutes, 5 minutes. Loss of a parking space, 5 to 10 seconds. Remember, change, which results in loss, produces grief. And we need to deal with these things. Now, as I look at the 5 steps of grief, they're only a reaction to a traumatic event. To me, grieving is actually a healing process. And God wants to be intimately involved in our healing process, in the healing process that grief is. True grieving begins where the 5 stages end. If you think about it a little bit. Let me illustrate with an acronym. T-E-A-R, TEAR. And maybe I pushed the first one a little bit. But T is to accept the reality of the loss. Now that's the end of. But when we accept the reality of the loss, and then E would be experience and embrace the pain of the loss. Sometimes you simply need to experience and embrace, okay, it does hurt. It really does. It doesn't do anything any good to try to say it didn't hurt. But we recognize, and when we do that, we can think about other people. We can think about Jesus and how he went through everything that we did in maybe a different example, but he understands our thought. God is very touched with our infirmities because Jesus knows what it's like. So to accept the reality of the loss, E, to experience and embrace the pain of the loss, and A, is then to adjust to the new environment without the lost object. We just need to adjust to the new environment without the lost object. When I think about it, I mean, out at camp, we have to adjust to the new environment that does not include Nat and Ruth and five children. That is a real reality, and it sometimes it's happened before. It happened when other people left, and I know that we like to have people here, but there's going to be a new reality. We have to move ahead, and then R is reinvest in the new reality. Now, true healing continues long after the honeymoon period is over. The friends have stopped calling. Everyone thinks you should be over it. Everyone is supposed to be back to normal. So many times we think that now a person has worked through it, but reality still continues to sink in, and we need to embrace the new reality and accept the new reality and reinvest in the new reality. Now, I'd like for you to turn with me to Mark chapter 15. In Mark 15 here, we can see how this tremendous truth paid off and continues to pay off. I had a hard time choosing which Bible account to read, because there are so many accounts in the Bible that illustrate the truth of reinvesting in the new reality. Abraham, and when he offered Isaac, he had to invest in the reality. When God said to Abraham, look, you need to go offer Isaac, he went through denial. He went through bargaining. He went through anger. He went through all these, and finally he accepted it. He invested in that new reality. He took Isaac, and then is when God worked. Elisha, at the passing of Elijah, Nehemiah, the rebuilding of the temple. There are many others in the Bible, examples in the Bible of people who faced, in the face of tragedy and loss, moved ahead. They did the next thing. They were blessed and rewarded by amazing events that could only have been orchestrated by God himself. Now, with those ideas in mind, let's read here in Mark chapter 15, verse 47. I'm going to read chapter 16 as well. And Mary Magdalene and Mary, the mother of Joseph, observed where he was laid. This was after Jesus had died on the cross. They laid him in the tomb, and Mary and the two Marys observed where he was laid. They accepted the reality. They decided then, in the next chapter, to reinvest in the new reality. Now, when the Sabbath day was past, Mary Magdalene, Mary the mother of James, and Salome bought spices that they might come and anoint him. They said, at least that's something we can do. They did the next thing. They decided they're going to come and anoint the body of Jesus. Very early in the morning, on the first day of the week, they came to the tomb when the sun had risen. And when they said among themselves, who will roll away the stone from the door of the tomb for us? And they said among themselves, who will roll away the stone from the door of the tomb for us? But when they looked up, they saw that the stone had been rolled away, for it was very large. And entering the tomb, they saw a young man clothed in a long white robe, sitting on the right side, and they were alarmed. But he said to them, do not be alarmed. You seek Jesus of Nazareth, who was crucified. He is risen. He is not here. See the place where they laid him. But go, tell his disciples and Peter that he is going before you into Galilee. There you will see him, as he said to you. By the way, and Peter. Did you notice that? And Peter. What about, why did he say and Peter? Who do you think was going through tremendous grief? Tremendous. Why did I deny Jesus? Why did I do? He said, tell his disciples and Peter that I'm risen. And Peter, that he is going before you into Galilee. There you will see him, and as he said to you. So they went out quickly and fled from the tomb, for they trembled and were amazed, and they said nothing to anyone, for they were afraid. Now, I don't know if they just said nothing to anyone as they went until they got to the other disciples. It must be that's what they did. But now, verse 9, now when he arose early on the first day of the week, he appeared first to Mary Magdalene, out of whom he had cast seven demons. She went and told those who had been with him, as they mourned and wept. And when they heard that he was alive and had been seen by her, they did not believe. They weren't quite willing to invest in that new reality. They didn't believe. But sometimes we have to believe. After that, he appeared in another form to two of them as they walked and went into the country. And they went and told it to the rest. But they did not believe them either. Later, he appeared to the 11 as they sat at the table. And he rebuked their unbelief and hardness of heart because they did not believe those who had seen him after he had risen. And he said to them, go into all the world and preach the gospel to every creature. He who believes and is baptized will be saved, but he who does not believe will be condemned. And these signs will follow those who believe. In my name they will cast out demons. They will speak with new tongues. They will take up serpents. And if they drink anything deadly, it will by no means hurt them. They will lay hands on the sick, and they will recover. So then, after the Lord had spoken to them, he was received up into heaven and sat down at the right hand of God. Where do you think Jesus is right now? He's sitting at the right hand of God. What is he doing now? He is interceding for us. It's a reality today, right now. He knows what we're going through. There's so many verses that talk about that, the fact that Jesus is alive today, now. And then, verse 20, they went out and preached everywhere, the Lord working with them and confirming the word through the accompanying signs. Now, I'm not going into the accompanying signs here, but it says these signs will follow those who believe. There are many things that we don't always understand, but are there things that are happening in your life that are happening because you believe? They are in mine. Because I believe, there are things happening in my life, and there are things happening all over the world. And if you think about it, they went out and preached everywhere, the Lord working with them and confirming the word through the accompanying signs. Because they accepted the new reality, because they invested in the new reality, even after all their grief, God continues to work with them. And we sit here today in this building in Dunmore East, Ireland, because of Jesus, because of what he did, because of God and his work in our lives. And as we continue to believe and continue to study and continue to apply the Word of God in everyday living in practical ways, then we have hope, and we don't have to live in grief, depression, sadness, anger, denial, and all of those things that we talked about. We can live in hope. We can live in peace. We can live in joy. We can live with a future, and a future that will not be cut off. There's verses that talk about that. I'm going to just tell you that I'm finished. It didn't take me as long as I thought it might take me. So I'm going to let you have some time. If there's things that you thought about that should be added to this, I will just give you this time and thank you for your attention to this point. I just appreciate your interest and concern here. So.